Hey everyone, and welcome to Scouting the League. We are just 15 days away from night one of the NFL draft, 5 days away from the spring portal window opening. The UFL is in full swing with games going on again this weekend. Spring games at the college level are happening all over the country. Football truly is a year-round business, and we are here for it. Questions on any of those topics, make sure you check out our show archives, catch up on all those topics as we've hit on a bunch of them. But let's get to where we are today. It's April. This time of year, rumors are flying around in the public. Guys like Mike Penix perhaps sneaking back up into public draft boards in round one. Scouts, coaches, and teams, though, are busy behind the scenes, not only getting the final draft board ready for three busy days at the end of April, but starting to do work on the 2025 class as well. Yes, for scouts, too, the calendar never truly stops, just hastens and slows in different cycles. Local days, top 30 visits, or for those that want to complain, 30 visits, undrafted free agent prep, and more. April does not really slow down. We will get you all the information you need to know about what is actually going on. First, let me remind you, like, subscribe, and share this podcast wherever you are listening. Give us a five-star review. Leave us comments wherever you can. Of course, Neil Stratton is at Inside the League on Twitter. InsideTheLeague.com will be your place to find more information. And if that's not enough, Neil has a blog, succeedinfootball.com, that has some tremendous thoughts on all things football that you should read weekly and take time, go back and in the archives and catch up. I'm Roderick David at RightStepADV on Twitter is where you can find me, as well as my site, rsafootball.com. Of course, Twitter, probably the best spot to get to both of us for anything related to the show today or questions about previous episodes. Definitely encourage you to head over, hit us up, give us DMs, whatever it is, we'll probably get back to you. So with that, I'd say let's dive in. But to do that today, the way we're going to go, I need to turn the reins over to my ever accomplished co-host and today host, Neil Stratton.
All right. So rules of the game for today. First of all, I know a lot of people love to dig in and say, top 30 visits is not an accurate term, but for what we're doing today, I'm going to refer to them as top 30 visits. I don't think we have to have purity tests on the NFL draft, at least not for today's edition. Also, before we get started, Roderick, why don't you kind of run down your story with regards to scouting, kind of where you've been, what you've done, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll call them top 30 visits, so we don't have anything to do there. Again, we were calling them top 30 visits in the building not that long ago. My background, again, football is always what I wanted to do. Let's head back to 2015. I was actually coaching at a Division III school, had the opportunity to come down to Atlanta during training camp 2015, basically kind of a three-week internship. Parlayed that into getting a scouting assistant position in February of 2016. So it was from day one, February 1, it was full speed, getting ready for the draft, getting ready for top 30 visits, local days, everything that was draft related. Of course, that was a fairly memorable draft for us. Keanu Neal, Deion Jones, Austin Hooper, Wes Schweitzer, Devondre Campbell. Really, really good draft class. It was a really fun one to jump into. From there, basically spent 2016, the fall as a scouting assistant, kind of started doing some pro scouting stuff at the end of the year, advances. Was actually at the Pittsburgh, New England AFC Championship game. Had Pittsburgh would have won, I would have had that that advance for the Super Bowl. Basically became a pro scout in the spring, kind of free agency time of 2017. Spent 2 years doing that. The spring of 2019, moved over to the Midwest as we had some staff move around. So I headed on the road, 2019, 2020 on the road. Ish as COVID hit, again doing it at home. 2021 was back on the road as a Midwest scout before I was told I couldn't do my job without a certain COVID vaccine, which is ultimately what landed me as a consultant. So spent time as a scouting assistant, pro scout, Midwest area scout, ran the local pro day, have done a little bit of everything in the front office. So I think my background is wider ranging than a lot of scouts, but also a little bit shorter than many as well.
Well, it's that variety of experiences that I think really is perfect for April, when so many things are going on, just kind of the last final preparations, obviously, for the draft. So let's start off with, you know, during your time as an area scout, what was April like for you? You're off the road, pro days are over with, you're having your visits, but for the most part, the hay's in the barn, or am I wrong?
No, for the most part, it is. Again, if you have done your job, if you've done your work, then most of the hay is in the barn. It is a lot of keeping track. Again, it's the time where you're continuing to work sources, probably on a handful of guys. Again, guys that you're, again, maybe still aren't completely comfortable with the answers you have. Again, there's always the cases where there's players that, again, get popped, get arrested. Again, we just saw it with Tavondre Sweat. Again, where maybe the actions that the players put out there, again, an arrest refutes or affirms, you know, beliefs or thoughts that you have. And again, the montage, a player's grade is probably pretty much set, but their character is always happening. So again, you're adding character notes, a conversation you had, funny nugget came up, interesting nugget, something new comes up. So again, you're continuing to do your work, you're monitoring your guys, but again, you better have a pretty good feel for just where all your guys are at. And again, most teams, most scouting departments are getting together for at least 10 days to 2 weeks to really dive in and get that front board, get that draft board established. And again, if you can't answer those questions come April, this is not the time where, hey, I've got to do more work on that. That's your February meetings. That's your pre-draft or your pre-combine, your pre-pro days. You may have, hey, I've still got to do some work on this guy. Come April, come the meetings that are happening right now, you better have a really good feel for this. And, you know, you're probably going to get asked those questions. Hey, you were still trying to figure this out on, you know, player X back in February. What do you know now? You better have a good answer for that. So for the most part, the hay is in the barn, and it's just a lot of monitoring, keeping up. And then the conversations really start happening as more and more eyes have seen this player.
He mentioned Tavondre Sweat. Obviously, it's a black mark for the young man. Obviously, the timing is really poor, but at the end of the day, does this significantly impact where he would be on your board, given that it is a one-time occurrence kind of thing?
Again, for a player like Tavondre, it sounds like this was a known, again, issue or a known flaw, and you know, whatever you want to call it, this was known, that this has been part of this player's past. Now, this is where it comes up. It sounds like he and that staff, the Texas staff, again, his camp, they've said all the right things. This is part, you know, he's a young player. That's the case for many people. You get to college, you got some freedom, go out, have fun, go crazy, whatever. Again, you grow up, you do the right things. What this creates is an inconsistency in the story, right? Again, if the story from Texas has been like, oh no, he hasn't touched it, he's not messing with it, he's not doing any of this, then it's like, hey, you told me all this, and now you're probably going back and questioning all your sources. Hey, is this really the case? Was it just a new one-time deal where he, you know, again, pro day is done, again, kind of his last breath before he hits his top 30 visits and really goes for it? Or is it, again, a pattern, and all of a sudden, well, you know, we said this, but he's actually been still struggling with it? I don't think it ultimately significantly impacts him. There's going to be, again, three or four teams that maybe drop him around, or, again, maybe take him all the way off the board. Just they feel they can't trust him, but he's a really good player. He's a unique talent. There will be plenty of teams that just maybe have to have one or two of those pieces. Hey, we thought we'd be good with less player development, player engagement, those types of resources involved. And it's like, no, we better have everything in place. And again, that becomes a conversation for the directors and the GM, the head coach, the owner. Hey, we bring in Tavondre, we're going to have to dedicate this amount of resources to him off the field in addition to what we're doing. So again, that's where, you know, as we've discussed on here, there's programs that, you know, teams, yeah, I call programs that teams have in place that are very good at that. And again, you think about some of the teams that take the quote unquote rogue actors and keep them on the field, keep them good citizens. There's teams that don't do well at that too. So again, some of those teams will still have him right in that same spot, and maybe you can grab him even a few spots later just because of what's happened.
Okay. All right, good. Okay. Now, we always hear, especially this time of year in press conferences, et cetera, that one player or one person doesn't make the pick. It's a collaborative effort. And that's true to most degrees. However, you were a Midwest guy. You knew the schools and the Big Ten and the MAC and what have you. But when you got to April, did you feel like you had a pretty good handle on the 100, 120, 130, whatever players that y'all had on the front board that you really felt were guys y'all wanted to potentially take in the draft? Or did you still kind of feel, well, I know my guys, but I don't know maybe as much about guys from the Southeast or the Pac-12 or whatever?
There's definitely an element still of unknown with those other areas. Again, you're going to know, you better be the expert on your players. Again, if a question ever comes up as an area guy, you should be the first one that any higher up is going to. So again, there's always that element. You've done the work on, again, you've watched the film, you've had maybe extended conversations on, again, the top 100, maybe the top 120. Again, beyond that, your day three guys, you're really going to probably have a pretty limited feel for those guys, unless there was a really more in-depth debate, you know, splitting, you know, or stacking players. Hey, we like this player. We also like this player. Where do we put him? You spend more time on those players. Again, your day one guys, again, you're going to have gone round and round on most of those, depending on where your draft position is. Again, quarterbacks, if you're not in the market for a quarterback, you're probably not going to have a ton of feel for those other than really what's kind of known generally. Again, same thing. If you're not drafting a left tackle in the first, again, you're probably not going to spend a ton of time as an organization on those players. So you may sit there in the draft. Hey, I know what Ola, or I know Joe Walt. I kind of know these guys in general if they're not my area. But again, you're going to really know more about the players that your team is really going to be, if you're targeting a corner, if you're targeting a wide receiver, you're going to know more about those players cross regionally. But again, it always comes back to you're making sure you're an expert on your area. And then whatever players pop up through the process of draft meetings that you're really doing work on, again, just through the process, you're going to learn more about those players as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That makes sense. Let's talk about top 30 visits. From the moment they get into the building, what does that look like? How long are they there? What can you do? What can you not do? What was your focus as a team when a player came in for that?
Well, let's back up before they even get in the building, from the time they land at your airport.
Right.
Again, as a scouting assistant, or again, sometimes as a local scout, if you live close, you were going to be kind of looped into that. But again, I'll say it in terms of a scouting assistant, because again, most teams are going to have their scouting assistants pick those players up. You're going to have a group of five or six. And again, from the time that those players are scheduled, the first thing is a communication aspect. Is your flight delayed? Is your flight early? Again, are you at the right spot to be picked up? Can you communicate? Can you be timely? All those things. Then the evaluation has already started. Again, I remember over the years, there were players that I circled the Atlanta airport 8 times and they said they were standing in one spot and they weren't. So again, is it a communication? Do you actually know where you're at? Again, you give them the benefit of the doubt because airports can be tricky sometimes. But again, you try calling them and they'll only text like, come on, I just need to know where you're at. Hey, raise your right hand. And, you know, their left hand is raised. Again, little things like that always being evaluated. And again, it's during top 30 visit time, there's guys that go from team to team, place to place. They're flying from Cincinnati to Atlanta. They're flying from New Orleans to Atlanta. They had a 30 visit. Hey, this is a whole new interview. It's time to hit refresh. Again, I know you're tired. It's a busy schedule. You haven't eaten. That was always a big thing when guys are getting in late. Hey, did you grab something from the airport? Are you relying on somebody else? Again, I had players that became almost combative because the food that we had provided them wasn't good enough. Really? And again, it's like, hey, this is what I can give you. It's 11 o'clock at night. We're getting to the hotel. there's a gas station open. Feel free to go grab something. No, I'm not paying for it. Again, call your agent. Yeah. And it's, you're again, these guys are getting evaluated. It becomes part of the notes. Again, the next day starts early. Again, not allowed for a top 30 visit. No, again, no medicals, no on-field workouts. It's about interviews, getting to know people. Again, kind of checking all those boxes. Every player has questions that teams are trying to answer. Hey, this guy was maybe not a great communicator. How does he do through the process? This guy is a raw scheme player. He's an athlete that's learned multiple positions. How much and how are we going to have to teach this guy? To make sure he's ready to go in our scheme. Again, it can be 15, 20, 30-minute meetings, coaches, GAs, whoever's in the building, player engagement, player development, take them on tours. Again, the whole time they're being, you know, being interviewed, guys snapping photos, are their eyes real big? And you get some of your smaller school guys, hey, do they look like they belong? Are they comfortable? Or are they starry-eyed and like, wow, I just can't believe I'm really here. Again, there's not a bad element to that. But again, you want a certain level of, yeah, I belong here. I'm going to come in and I'm going to compete. Again, you're probably going to get 15, 20, maybe 30 minutes with a head coach, GM. Maybe an owner will be around. Again, your directors, maybe a pro director type will be around through the conversations. A lot of time with coaches. That's the biggest thing, is a lot of time with coaches on top 30 visits to, again, is this guy going to be a guy in the room? Is he going to be good in the room? Does he fit our room? Does he fit our style, personality-wise, play style? Probably they've already determined that he probably should be based on the fact that he's there. But again, if we bring him in, does he fit with our group? And those are the questions. Again, that doesn't stop at the end of the day. Again, most teams are wrapping theirs up afternoon, you know, lunchtime to early afternoon. And then again, you've got a, you know, sometimes 2-hour window to get to the airport. Again, the interview's not done, right? Again, yeah, I know it's going to be, we're going to be pressed for time to get you to your flight. Again, we'll get it taken care of if you miss a flight or if something happens. But again, it's not the time where, no, we're not taking you separate. We're not ordering you a fancy Benz to come pick you up and take you down there. Hey, we'll get you there. Trust us. And again, I've seen situations where guys miss flights and, hey, no, it's all good. Let me know what I need to do. And then the other side where, you know, as a scouting assistant, players often forget that we're going to be going back and writing down notes on what just happened and getting yelled at or getting cussed at or getting told that we, you know, don't matter. Scouting assistants, that they do matter. So players always have to remember that you're dealing with somebody with the organization and the interview is not done until you're probably on the plane or at the gate checking in, because again, those scouting assistants and whoever is part of that process, ops people, again, I know different teams have people dedicated for that. Whoever that person is, GMs, head coaches, they're getting the notes from them on who was good to deal with and who was not.
It seems incredible to me that a lot of the T30 visits are with UDFAs or day three types. Were you really getting pushback from people? Were day three and UDFA types really saying, I'm not going to get a sandwich from the gas station, I'm starving, I want to go somewhere real? Were they saying, no, I'm just going to stay here and text you until I'm ready, rather than when you ask them to make a phone call? I mean, were they really that untoward towards NFL teams?
Generally speaking, those day three and UDFA guys were not like that. Again, I'm not saying that's never happened. Those were, again, in Atlanta, the theory primarily under Thomas was we were going to bring in those first round targets. Again, 15, again, maybe half of those, 15 to 20. And then that other half were those day three question guys. And again, it was more often than not those first and second round targets that were the guys that, you know, they've been told that they deserve certain things. And some guys buy into it. So again, some of those guys are one of the greatest, most respectful. Again, a guy that I remember, Justin Simmons, again, got drafted by Denver. He basically got other guys in line. Hey guys, like, just relax. Like, which way, again, you love a guy like that in the group. Again, somebody that if he was dressed professionally, again, not over the top, wasn't wearing a suit, but again, you could tell that he was locked in, great kid, did all the right things, helped get everybody else in line. And again, there's those guys that they're first rounders. They know they're first rounders. They don't think your team is taking them. So again, I'm just going to goof off and kind of be goofy, have fun. Again, there's a good element of that. You want to have them open up their personalities, but again, hey, it's time to rein it in here a little bit. And again, walk in, you might want to tuck your shirt in before you walk in with the GM and head coach. And again, don't say that. It's one of the, with some of the draft prep I do, I always tell guys, be memorable, but in the right way. And again, there's a lot of guys that are just told to be memorable and choose the wrong way to go about it.
Mm-hmm. Just to emphasize one more time, because it seems like I never get the same answer from people twice. You cannot ask someone to take a whiz quiz at a T30 visit, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And no medicals, no physicals, no nothing like that as well, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. All right. I just want to make sure, because that's something I've really been confused about in the past. Okay. Do you ever, I guess this kind of goes with what we've been talking about, but do you ever remove a guy from your board based off of a top 30 visit?
I don't know if I would say remove from the board. Again, their position may be slid down a little bit. They may be firmly established as a, again, I remember there was a linebacker we brought in who, unfortunately for him, answered the questions on the concerning side that we had when we brought him in. Again, that weight was a serious question. Again, the night he flies in, it was actually a smaller top 30, but there were just two guys together watching this dude eat when he had weight questions. Answered the questions again. It was it was almost comical, because again, we knew the questions going in. It was myself and another scouting assistant eating with him, and it's like, man, just, you're answering all the questions we need right here in this meal. And again, so we come out of the top 30, but everything else fantastic, everything else is player checks out, really good player. But again, go back to that meal and then, you know, the number of queso cups that this guy basically drank just right out of the cup. Like, come on, man, you're answering the questions in the wrong way. So you get done with that type of player, and it's like, all right, we had the questions, we have the answer. Unfortunately, he's not helping himself with this visit, and he's, unless he falls to us here, we would never draft him. Again, where we think this player is going to go, we would not draft him here. Again, say in those 20 to 30, we're not going to draft that player in this, in this range. Now, if he drops to that, 40 to 60, yes, we'll have a conversation. We'll see where he's at on the board, but firmly moved himself out of that first round for our team.
Was it volume of food, Roderick, or was it manner in which he consumed it?
It was everything. It was a Mexican restaurant, and they had good queso. And you get those little tubs of queso, and great, if you want to dip your burrito in there, if you want to dip some chips in there. But when you're basically refilling the cup three times, and I'm not joking, at one point he may have just put it to his mouth like it was a bowl of soup and drank the queso. It's to this day, I still laugh about it. And again, the other player that was with him was, I think it was a little bit surprising for him too, because he's kind of looking like, the guy looked like he had a meal for a family on his tray. And whatever, he's had a decent career still. So again, he was able to get by. But again, for us, it was just again, for me personally, it was a comical experience.
Okay, so as an area guy, Roderick, how much power, say, whatever, however, influence, whatever you want to call it, did you have in moving players up and down the board in April when, again, most of the hay was in the barn?
You're talking day one, day two, very little, if any. Again, that is, again, the kind of the adage goes, the first round, that's the owner's pick. Now, again, good owners, I would argue, let the GM, the head coach, make that pick. But again, some owners are going to make that pick. Great, that's your prerogative. You own the team. You can make whatever pick you want. Day two, again, that's really going to be, There better be a pretty good consensus on those players. So again, your voice as an area scout is going to matter in a pretty small percentage. You've done the work, but again, it's been handed off. Day three is where you can have some say, and really late day three if you really believe in a player, you're standing on the board for that player. But again, you're going to be one voice out of, you know, multiple voices. A regional is still going to watch that, probably a national as well. The college director is going to watch that player. And then the coaches are really going to come in. And that's where if a coach and a player or if a coach and an area scout are on the same page as the player, that's where they can make some hay. Really pushing a player, keeping a player in the seventh round, or as opposed to dropping them off the board. But again, for most teams, you're going to make your statement. You're going to stand on the table for a player, but you've got 5 to 6 area guys doing that, plus your coaching staff that's going to be doing that. You know, your 9 positions maybe. Again, it becomes a battle in a good way, a good battle that you can have. And you better have some serious conviction and feel really good about your player if you're gonna step on the board for them. And again, there's plenty of players that are like that, and then it kind of goes that way in the UDFA process too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the head coach that was there when you were there is back in the league. So for those Washington Commanders fans who are interested, what was Dan Quinn like on draft day? How much impact did he have on the players that were chosen? You know, kind of how did all that work?
And Dan, Washington's got a great one in Dan Quinn. I can't say enough positive things about him. One of the really unique things that DQ really did was it was a full team approach. He wanted coaches and scouts working together and on the same page. Again, a really defined, one of the things him and Thomas did when Thomas hired him, a really defined set of traits of what we wanted in at that time in Atlanta Falcon. And that was, it was very clear. And again, I would make the statement that it became less, the longer those two were together, the less clear it became, which is often the case as teams kind of, you know, have their identity and don't have to put it down on paper as much. So again, I would expect this year to be a very focused and detailed plan for what the Washington Commanders want. Again, Q is going to give every person, including the scouting assistant, a voice. Everybody in that organization, if you've done work on a player in any capacity, you're going to have a voice at some point, maybe not in draft meetings, but again, DQ, again, I don't know a ton about Adam Peters, but if Adam and Q are going to work together, I'd imagine Adam probably has some of that in him as well. You're going to have a voice. Guys, again, hey, when these players went through on top 30 visits with the equipment room, how were these guys? What were they talking about? What questions were they asking? Hey, in the weight room, what were these guys really interested? Hey, you were just cooking the meal in the team cafe. Hey, how were guys with you? Again, that was very much a Dan Quinn, you know, part of the philosophy, and he completely embraced that. Coaches and scouts were not in silos. He wanted us working together. So when it came to what player we were taking, we knew these guys were going to be Falcons. We knew these guys were going to have these traits, these personalities. They were going to come in and be these kinds of people. And that's going to be, I fully expect Washington to be locked in and, you know, have a really good draft with that group, and have, you're going to be able to see the philosophy and the identity that Adam and DQ want to have in Washington after this draft. Again, if there's any questions leading into it, those questions will be answered based on the, you know, 5, 6, 7, however many players they take. And then, you know, maybe with the UDFAs they sign as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, when was your board set? I mean, it's never, I guess, totally immovable, but at what point were pretty much you knew who y'all would be selecting from on draft day?
Yeah. So there's definitely, I had two really different experiences, two GMs in Atlanta. And Thomas had been, by the time I got there in 16, Thomas was established. He obviously had a really, really good run as a GM, had a lot of success. Again, had some failures too, but had, I would easily argue, more success than failure. With Thomas, by the time I got there in 16 and really, you know, 17, when I was really even more a part of everything, you know, free agency meetings, draft meetings, all that kind of stuff, Thomas had his process really, really ironed out. And scouts really didn't know that final draft board until Wednesday or Thursday of the draft. Again, very end of April. It was, again, we had our meetings. The meetings were a lot less. Again, Thomas had his process and was doing his work, and we were going to talk about some things, but again, it was going to be a lot less in a group and more in some one-on-one or again, higher up above, you know, pro scouts or area scouts or anything like that. When Terry came in and he really let Kyle Smith run the show in terms of getting that draft board ready, as Terry was getting everything else established as a first time GM, getting a new staff, all that he had going on, the board was open from the day that we, you know, got in February. It was an open board. We could go in there. We were constantly adjusting it. I would say that draft board was fairly well set when we got done with our February meeting, or sorry, with our April meetings. And again, if that was, I'm trying to remember if it was about a week before the draft. Now, there were still going to be some things moved around. Again, as Terry, as Arthur talked, as Arthur Blank was part of the process, if Rich McKay, again, whoever was part of the process, there were probably going to be a few things laid around, but we had a really good feel for what that entire draft board looked like, probably about by mid-April to really, you know, if you're going to say the 20th, about a week before the draft. And it was just two truly different ways to, you know, view that front board. Again, one was complete. It was under lock and key until draft night. And the other one, it was open. If you wanted to go talk about it, talk with your regional scout, talk with your coach about kind of where everything's at. And so it was definitely open. But again, by mid-April, that with under Terry, it was you kind of felt pretty good about where that draft board was.
Okay. All right. Now, what was your role on local pro days, which, you know, take place this month? Obviously, I think you had a pretty hands-on role in that. Who was involved in selecting who was going to come? How much did y'all fudge maybe the metro area of Atlanta as far as who got invited and that kind of thing? Take us through that.
Yeah. In Atlanta, when I was a pro scout, I was 2 years basically fully responsible for most aspects. Had a great team. Again, scouting assistants did a ton to help me. The pro director, Joel Collier, did it as much as he could to help me. We had a couple different scouting coordinators who did a ton to help. And then some of the coaching GAs were a little bit more involved as well. So it took everybody. But as a pro scout, I was the one responsible for, again, first generating the list. And it was, you know, a pretty easy first list. Any player that we think, again, metro area is going to get invited that has any grade on them. Again, even if they are a reject grade, we're at least going to look at the numbers. We went anywhere from about 50 to high end. We had about 80 players 1 year, which I think is about as big as you'd ever want to be. And again, within those, then, all right, hey, this guy's a reject and a character reject, we're not inviting him. Or, hey, this is a reject at a position, we've got a bunch of guys. Again, let's not worry about him. But again, you look at some of those, like, hey, man, we need another defensive lineman. This guy's a reject, but at least he has a grade. We've got character on him. We need a fourth guy. Hey, let's go ahead and invite him. In terms of metro area, Atlanta obviously has a ton of good football players. We pushed the boundaries as far as we could. And you have to submit your names to the NFL. If the NFL says no, the NFL says no. We're going to submit them and hope they say yes. And there were certainly players that we had no optimism based on where their address, whatever address it was, we were not optimistic. The NFL, again, thankfully, I think does a good job knowing what the local day means to some of these guys, that they said, yeah, we'll let this player in, which allowed for, again, for some of these guys, their dreams to come true. You're walking in a building, you're putting on an Atlanta Falcon shirt and shorts, you're working out where the players work out, you're getting coached, put through drills by NFL coaches. That may be it for them. And again, so I was always appreciative of the NFL. It was a really easy process for them, submit names and addresses. And again, you get a thumbs up or thumbs down. And again, from there, you're managing the whole process, sending invites, contact, talking to agents. Again, for the most part, you're inviting players that are not draftable. For the most part, are the players that are coming to them. And so again, they're just excited. It's whatever they can do, showing up at the right time. for your players that are, again, we had schools like Georgia, Georgia Tech, Georgia State. You get some draftable players. Hopefully you invite those players to come out, kind of go through the process. They're not going to work out. Maybe there can be a side conversation through the process with a coach. And again, they're part of the local pro day, but they're not going to do the full gamut that everybody else is. Again, your local pro day, you're going to, if there's anybody that you need verified measurables, verified times, you do very little retesting, 40 short shuttles, verticals. But again, if there's guys, especially small school guys who didn't ever have a verified number, again, you might do something on those guys. Again, get updated weights, maybe on a few players, and again, get them through the process. Kind of like for those top 30 visits, there's a handful of players. Hey, you want to watch them. Maybe you assign somebody to watch them throughout the entire process to see, you know, that they're doing everything. And then beyond, you know, again, beyond the scouts, there were some local scouts. Again, if you lived locally and you wanted to pop in for it, if it was not during your meetings, hey, we invite those ones in. But really, the local pro days is specifically in Atlanta. And I think a number of teams do it this way. It's really about the coaches. Coaches are going to, you know, have some feel for, again, running guys through this. Wouldn't want this guy. Again, I know his grade's a priority free agent, but yeah, I don't think this guy would fit with us based on X, Y, and Z in the drills. Hey, that guy may still come in, but again, the coach has kind of made his mind up on that player already. And you don't want to bring a guy in that has no chance based on the coach making up his mind already. So they're going to have 5 to 10 minutes of drills and thanks, grab a meal and hit the road. And again, a really, really good way for your local guys to establish themselves as priority guys. And then for any mini camp tryout guys to firmly establish them as either walking out the door and say, like, hey, if, you know, really, this is where we see you. But yeah, we're going to be honest with the agents. Again, good scouts are honest with agents. They're not going to, hey, yeah, we see you as a PFA, and then come Saturday of the draft, no, I think you're just a mini camp try again. We're going to be honest with them. And hey, if he does slip, we want him here as a local guy. Give him a chance to try out, and again, it kind of achieve his dreams in that way.
How far is Athens from Atlanta, Roderick? Is it
from Metro? I don't know.
Metro area.
So it is. Every team is assigned 3 schools that they are, regardless of anything else, they're going to get those players. Again, for Atlanta, it was Georgia, Georgia Tech, and Georgia State. Where, so if you were on that roster, regardless of anything else, you were going to get to come in. Athens would definitely be a fringe if you went to Georgia Southern and you were an Athens kid. Again, it would probably be, again, we would absolutely submit that name. But again, it's going to be, you know, you're probably a little more fringe. Again, they say Atlanta metro area, again, 50 miles, 60 miles. Again, Atlanta metro area is really big. That's a ton of players. But again, especially South Atlanta, again, guys down that way, guys out toward, you know, Savannah or the coast. Again, you can get guys maybe stretching that fringe a little bit. And again, I think the NFL does a good job, you know, being not a lot of teams. It's surprising to me the number of teams that do not do local days anymore. And again, they have their reasons, but again, it's an opportunity for these guys to get in the building and again, achieve their dreams in some ways. And I think the NFL, you know, thankfully recognizes that, where they're not just saying no based on a hard and fast rule. Again, as long as you're not, again, trying to get up to the borders of, you know, Anderson, South Carolina and say that, oh, he's actually a local guy for Atlanta. You know, they're going to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so now let's talk about your role during the UDFA process, because, man, I talk to people at teams and it seems like no one does the process exactly the same. How much responsibility were you given? Did you have financial responsibility as well? I mean, kind of take us through that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on when you say every team does it different. And again, within teams, different positions and different scouts do it differently as well. Again, my experience, again, you better have a pretty good working relationship with a coach that you're cross-checking with in Atlanta. Again, we were assigned a position. I was always an edge rush, outside linebacker, DN type guy. Me and Phil Emery, he would handle the interior. So we would be working with similar coaches. We'd do a lot of meetings together. We would talk about some stuff. But then at the end of the day, when it came to signing those guys, we would be given our numbers and we would be kind of responsible for those kind of 2 different positions. Again, good veteran scouts are going to really lead the process. I've seen younger scouts absolutely get railroaded by coaches and have no say in the process other than, hey, go do this and go do that, which is not a, I don't think, a good way, because again, some of these coaches have spent maybe a month doing work on any of these guys, where scouts have been doing, again, for especially guys in their area, maybe a year and a half of work on them. So again, definitely different perspective. But again, the best relationships are one where coaches and scouts can put down together, watch some film, talk about why each party thinks they're a good fit, why, where they go through the process. Scouts are going to do a lot of work with agents. Hey, yes, I know we think your guy is going to get drafted. That's what every agent is going to say. Good agents should still, hey, if we don't, that's always there. I had agents hang up the phone. No, my guy's getting drafted, and come day three of the draft, they don't get drafted. They're turning around calling me. It's like, hey, you hung up on me before. You, again, I was trying to be honest with you. I think your guy's getting drafted, but if he slips, you know, we have a spot for him, and maybe a really favorable spot. So again, if there's any agents out there listening, I don't care if your guy, you think he's going to get drafted in the fifth round. If a team calls, at least have some civility. And hey, yeah, we think he's going to get drafted in the fifth. Great. If he goes undrafted, again, we'll have you in our list. But again, having that conversation beforehand is really important. And scouts are really going to handle a lot of those. Again, getting a prep. What are your numbers? How many are you going to be signing? Again, hey, we've got three spots. We think we're going to draft one. Again, maybe we draft two. So again, your board's going to change a little bit in terms of how many you're going to have to sign. Again, in that 2016 year, I think we signed like 32 undrafted free agents, which was a massive number. Again, on the low end, I think there was one year we only signed 15 or 16. It meant I had to sign one defensive end, one pass rusher, whatever the number was. So again, it can vary very greatly in that. But again, you want the coaches are going to do some recruiting on the other end of it. Calling the players, hey, this is, I've watched your film. Again, you kind of go back into that college recruiting mode. This is why you're fit. This is where we see you. Again, I've heard coaches go well beyond the recruiting of, you know, being honest. And hey, we think you're, you know, I would have put a third round grade. And it's like, come on now, let's not go too far. Cause again, these players are smart. They're going to turn around and talk to their agents. But again, good ones. Hey, yeah, we see you as a UDFA, but again, I as a coach have developed these three players as UDFAs into quality 53 man players. And those are the numbers you always want to lean back on, both individually as a coach and as a team. Different teams, different coaches have good track records. Again, really one guy that maybe, again, Brian Poole, undrafted free agent that played, you know, he was a starter in the Super Bowl as a nickel and went on to have a really good career. Sherrod Neesman, undrafted free agent that had a good career in Atlanta, New Orleans, kind of bounced around here and there. But again, undrafted free agents that have 5, 6, 7 year careers, that is, you know, by far beating the odds of even the average draft pick. So those guys, if you have a couple of those guys, you can, you know, kind of point to, it always help at some of those positions. But then again, at the end of the number, what is your situation? What is your position numbers? And then again, signing bonus, and what are you willing to do contract wise? Again, kind of answering your question, as scouts, you were responsible for, hey, you're given a certain pool of money to use as signing bonus. And then again, as it has evolved, again, a certain amount of, you know, P5, that guaranteed money, how much guaranteed money are you going to give on this contract? Again, that really exploded during the COVID time just because numbers were so low. But again, has kind of evolved into it into one of those things where teams are willing to give more of that guaranteed money for certain guys, knowing that, hey, even if he's not on our 53, we'll guarantee that money when he's on the practice squad and kind of keep him around in that way. And he gets claimed, again, somebody else can pick up any of that money. So teams have been more open to that. Again, in Atlanta, there was a pretty kind of pretty cut and dried formula for that. If there was anybody that you really, really starting to fight on, again, you could grab the salary cap guy. Nick Polk, who we've had on here before, was part of that process. Or again, the college director, whoever it was that you maybe needed to come in if you wanted to grab one of those big guns and try to close on a guy. Mm-hmm.
Did you say y'all signed 32 UDFAs one year?
I want to say that was the 2016 year. That was a major roster turnover year. We were a young team. Again, five of those six draft picks we had that year, I think, were essentially starters or major contributor. And Wes kind of might have been the outlier. Wes Schweitzer, our he drafted his left tackle out of San Jose State. I think he was our primary backup guard. Got a little bit of play time, but was active for a number of games. But yeah, it was a major roster turnover year. We had some money maybe dictated a little bit where we had some big contracts and didn't have a lot of some of that veteran free agent money to spend. But again, bunch of those guys were expected to come in, be back end roster guys, be practice squad guys. It was a massive number. It was, I want to 32 sticking in my mind. It was close to 30 either way. I want to say 32, but it could be right around that number if somebody really wants to check me on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's fair. It's big number, but no, definitely varies by team. And I Absolutely. Think that's something that's important to kind of emphasize. Okay, so when did you start looking at the next year's draft class? Was it during that April window? Was it prior to that? Was it after? I mean, kind of how'd that work?
Yeah, so you'll get one of those spots where you'll get different answers based on, you know, different scouts, right? Again, for as an area scout, you're always going to have guys that choose to come back to school. Again, with COVID, you've got a whole gamut, extra level of those. But again, you get some juniors that schools were willing to talk about that choose to come back to school, maybe surprise. You've already done your work on them. You get some updated games, updated grades, whatever. So you're already prepping in that way. But again, pro days is always a really fantastic time to start to get some, again, just general character questions. Who are the players that I really should be watching? Blesto NFS scouts are out there doing their work. And again, if you have relationships with those, again, some teams will start to populate those where, again, I remember there are times where I just had an hour block of time at the combine. Hey, I've heard a bunch about this player for 2025, and I'm just gonna watch a game on him already. So through the process, pro days, you're maybe spending half a day. If it's a long day, you're there till 3 or 4 o'clock. You've got some time in the evening. Hey, why not throw on some 2025 tape and start to get your summer work done? Because, you know, come June, July, you want to have most of your 2025 fall list ready to go. Again, I would make the argument the good scouts are not just relying on those NFS and Blesto reports and are doing some of their own work. And so you're going to start to do 2025 work throughout the spring. Again, it's never a priority. And not everybody's going to do it. There are scouts that sit there and wait until post-draft. Again, that's fine. They have their process. It just probably becomes a little bit busier month of May for them to get their reports done. Some scouts don't have to do anything prep work-wise, maybe a one-liner prior to going out on the road that fall. Again, different teams have different priorities, different, you know, parameters. I'm always going to make the argument, the more you know, the more you're prepped, the more you have done early, you're just going to have an easier and more productive fall for those scouts that are doing the work in that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if you've made it this far with us, then you're pretty interested in the finer points of especially day three, but really the whole draft process. And if that fits you and you want even more, and you're truly a junkie, tomorrow night, which will be the 11th, I believe. April 11th. 9 p.m. Eastern, we'll be joined at Inside the League by Scott Fitterer. Scott is a longtime Seahawks executive, also did a term as the general manager of the Panthers, obviously. He'll be coming on. We'll have 10 questions for him, kind of like what we've done with Roderick today. We'll talk about, again, the finer points of the draft, what day three looks like, how evaluation takes place. Not the same exact questions, but kind of along the same lines. Just kind of a little piled higher and deeper, shall we say, from what I've talked about with Roger today. And so all you got to do is be an ITO client, $29.95 a month. You can cancel at any time. Love to have you. More details at Inside the League or at my Twitter at Inside the League, and love to have you. So that's kind of an open invitation. Everyone's welcome. All you got to do is be part of the ITL team. Roderick, any other final comments kind of on day three, the draft process, what's going on behind the scenes that maybe most people don't know about right now with their favorite NFL team?
Yeah, I mean, again, I speak specifically to a lot of what I experienced in Atlanta. Obviously, I've I try to reference things. Again, you have your sources, your connections. You learn about what other teams are doing. Again, maybe you bring in, again, we brought in a Kyle Smith and a Terry Fontenot who did things differently than Thomas did. There's a lot of different ways to do things. Again, if you are really interested in this, I couldn't encourage you enough to, you know, pay that money, sign up for ITL, listen to Scott Fitter, because again, there's going to be different ways that everybody does things. There's 32 ways to win. There's 32 plus ways to win. There's 32 ways to get ready for an NFL draft. Nobody does it the same. Nobody is right. Nobody's wrong. Again, I would always make the argument there's better, more efficient, more collaborative, all those things. But getting perspective and perspective from people that have actually been in buildings. Scott's been in buildings a bunch of times, a bunch of years through kind of different cycles and in good and bad teams, and always check credentials. Again, a lot of people like to talk about a lot of different things out there, and check credentials on all these people and kind of find out what they're, if they have an axe to grind, if they have an agenda to push, or if they're just football people that want to talk about their experiences. So a lot of different information can be out there. So the more information you can have, and then, you know, use some discernment and glean through what is good and what is bad information, right?
That's correct. Now, next week, I don't know, Roger, if we want to let the cat out of the bag. We're already booked for next week's guest. And if you're a draft nut, and you probably are, then we've got something special for you. Do we want to talk about that now, Eric? Roderick, I don't want to put you on the spot.
Ooh, man. Well, you already said the name Eric now, so I guess we have to. Yeah, friend of mine, friend of the program, Eric Edholm, NFL.com is going to be on with us next week. So if you are, you know, a fan of his, if you've read any of his work, we're going to swing through his mock draft. I'll probably tell him where I think he's wrong. Neil will he'll probably be the level head in between us as we talk about a few of these players. But again, we'll talk team needs, his mock draft, what we're hearing, what he's hearing, where we agree, where we disagree. But it's going to be a fun conversation with Eric Edholm of NFL.com. So definitely want to tune in for that one. Before we go, let me remind you, check out Agent Live 360. If you're an agent, NIL rep, anyone with a portfolio of players, teams, or scouts, trying to manage Google Docs can only take you so far. That's where Agent Live 360 comes in. Designed by sports agents for sports agents, the first and only all-inclusive software to help you efficiently run your agency. If you're an agent now, you know efficiency is important. Player profiles, scout profiles, team profiles, marketing endorsements, expenses and revenues, invoices, and the brand new Agent Live Pay feature all included in your subscription. Head over to agentlive360.com, sign up for a demo. I will be the one to take you through that demo. We'll hop on a Zoom call, perhaps even talk some football. Maybe it's a good, easy, cheap way to, you know, just hop on. We won't even do Agent Live 360, but you can head to the website, sign up for it, and we'll just talk some ball anyway. Again, highly encourage you, head over to InsideTheLeague.com, get signed up. That way you can hear Scott Fitter tomorrow night. That conversation is going to be really good. Again, a different perspective. Somebody that, you know, sat in the big chair is going to have some really good, unique insight into this whole process. And I can promise you, even if you sign up and then cancel, it's going to be worth the money that you pay just to get signed up for them. So if you have any questions on today's episode for myself, for Neil, again, maybe you want to try to get something to Scott to, you know, in the program to be asked, make sure you find Neil or I at Inside the League on Twitter, at Right Step AEDV. Those always the best places. Teams are busy. Scouts are busy. We're going to keep on rocking through the process and keep on scouting.